sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting in the evening sun, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide.
Hey there, you're tuning into Shorelines Radio with me, Chandler, also known as the Salty Sasquatch, Alexandra B. Fishin, and the Blind Tarpon.
Just Robert is fine.
Robert, you're a manager at Fish and Frank's. What's my title? Employee of the year.
There you go.
Nice.
The employee hired this year.
Perfect.
Let's talk fishing.
Yeah.
Good idea.
I'd like to talk about a spot that I've fished a lot here in Florida and here in Southwest Florida. Anger Pier. Tom Adams Pier.
Bridge.
Yeah. It's
not the bridge, but it's the pier.
Yeah. The little pier next to the bridge.
Can you fish from the bridge?
No. It is posted no fishing.
Okay.
So if you see me up there, don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. There's a little parking lot there. It's kind of might be confusing if you're going there for the first time that it is actually parking for the pier.
Yeah, it's on the Englewood Beach Road, and right before, like literally right before you go onto the Tom Adams Bridge, there is a little parking lot on the left that looks like it's parking for those condos, but it's not. It's the actual parking for that pier, and it's small. They should,
yeah,
you know.
No more than 15 spots, I'd say.
Yeah. And you can park across the street at the Englewood Bait House, but...
And the walk to the pier is nothing.
Yeah,
which
you
I'm
get out of your car and you're
there. I'm super excited
by.
I haven't been to Placida yet just because I'm afraid of the walk. I'm pretty lazy. And yeah. I hate lugging my stuff anywhere.
Well, it's a great pier for if you've got children, small children, or if you're mildly or even extremely handicapped, because it is a short walk and it is a very short pier, and there are handicapped spots if you're sitting in a wheelchair. You utilize the railings where they've got them cut down lower, so it's kind of one of those piers that is extremely versatile for a whole lot of different people to utilize it. The only problem is it doesn't hold a whole lot of people because of the lack of parking and the size of the pier itself.
That's true. And there's a guy out there that I've fished with quite a few times who is he has a walker with wheels on it, you know, like a stroller walker or whatever. And, you know, he's out there. He puts me to shame. He's out there probably 7 nights a week. Yeah. But, no, it is a great
He probably
place.
Earned that walker and has retired now where he can go out there and fish 7 nights a week.
Fair enough. That's true. But, well, right now...
It's not the longest pier. Where would you walk to if the entire pier was empty? Where is the prime spot there?
Well, for me personally, that's one of my favorite smaller kind of sport fishing spots. You know, you might not go there and get your snook of a lifetime, but you can go and pull good numbers of snook. And even right now, this time of year, that kind of transitional period, there's a lot of small tarpon in there, anywhere from 5 to, you know, 30, 40 pounds. And for those fish, I much prefer the very end of the pier.
Okay.
And why is that?
Well, on your incoming tide, at the end of the bumper, which is maybe 60 feet.
What's the bumper?
Well, it's a boat bumper that's in the very middle of the bridge, but it has a light. It's a wooden bumper that kind of curves out towards the pier. It's a little bit of a cast to cast towards it, but fishing at night, which is mostly when I go for these fish, in the evening, you know, sundown on... on the incoming tide, especially, that light at the end of the wooden bumper off the end of the pier, it actually comes out from the bridge, but you can cast to it from the end of the pier.
It's about the only way to really access it.
Yeah, you're not allowed on the bridge.
Because the pier is paralleling right next to the bridge.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just trying to follow you here and make sure that I'm absorbing it right.
Yeah. So the bridge and the pier are parallel to each other. But if you go to the very end of the pier, the bumper is kind of parallel to the end of the pier, not the side of the pier.
Perpendicular to the pier.
Yeah. But on your incoming tide, under that light and those shadow lines, it holds a lot of snook, tarpon. Sometimes schools of bluefish roll through there, jacks. There's been a lot of ladyfish lately. But it's just a great spot to go and catch a few fish, you know.
What happens if that spot's taken?
Well, I've been out there times where you've got a dozen people shoulder to shoulder, and for the most part, there is kind of an etiquette to that.
Yeah.
And they'll let you take turns casting. Every once in a while, you get kind of a rude person who mm-hmm. wants that spot all to themselves, but...
Well, it's kind of hard to understand when you're, you know, 8 at the end of the pier and nobody else is fishing the entire length of the pier.
Yeah.
And you got somebody that wants to stand shoulder to shoulder with you.
Yeah.
So the tide's coming in. What if the tide's going out there?
Well, if the tide's going out, off to the opposite corner of where you would cast to that light, there is a spot where the bumper, there's a gap between the bumper and the concrete from the bridge. And on the incoming tide, that kind of eddies and then goes around that corner on that concrete. And that corner of that concrete sits maybe 10 feet away from a piling from the bridge. And there's a lot of current that gets pushed in there, and a lot of those fish will sit and hang up on that concrete. So that's a great place to cast on the incoming tide. There are also old pilings from a pier that used to be there. And on the incoming tide, those are a great spot to kind of cast between or cast past and work your lure through them. You know, you got to be kind of careful. You can snag up and whatnot.
You can snag up or the fish can break you off.
Yeah.
But that's why the fish are there, is because of all that structure.
Yeah.
So regardless whether the tide is coming in or going out this time of year, which is kind of early fall, water temperatures are dropping a little bit. The fish are starting to focus in on hanging around a lot of those areas. But you've got the bumpers. You got the light at the bumper of the bridge.
Yeah.
Then you've got the actual base of the bridge. It's parallel or perpendicular to the pier itself, along with the old pilings. So that pier being in such close proximity to the bridge itself, and it kind of comes in a little bit, like its own little peninsula.
Yeah.
It creates a lot of funky little currents there that eddy. So even if the tide's coming in between you and the pier and the actual bridge or the main shoreline, sometimes the tide will actually be doing the opposite because it's ricocheting off of the wall, the old broken down pilings, and the pier itself. So there's a lot of different little bizarre scenarios there that can screw with you a little bit, essentially, you know. So I'm sure that there's a little bit of a learning curve when you go there.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say the most challenging place to fish is actually in between those little old pilings. But the great thing about them is on any tide, even the highest of tides, they still stick up out of the water, so avoiding them while fishing through them is fairly easy. But figuring out where those fish might be and where there might be a little hang up or something, you know, it is a learning curve.
So since you're primarily targeting snook and the occasional juvenile tarpon over there, what is your rod and reel and your setup scenario going to be?
I like minimum 7 foot 10 to 20 or 12 to 20 rod, 4,000 size reel, but mostly I prefer something bigger, 7.6, 10 to 20 or a 15 to 25, 5,000 or 6,000 size reel.
Almost tarpon size gear.
Yeah, exactly.
Like maybe big tarpon size gear.
Yeah, maybe a touch under, but the reason for that is you're not going to be catching 100-pound fish, but you've got a small window of opportunity to keep even a smaller snook, a 25 to 30-inch snook, from getting around something or underneath your feet. So having a little bit heavier gear helps with that quite a bit.
Okay. So you got all that structure, the pilings of the bridge, the bumper of the bridge, plus the pilings of the old broken down pier.
Yeah.
And then the pier itself. So you want something to just basically have a little bit better control over those fish.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are you using for your main line leader, and what are you using for bait or lures?
I prefer 40 or 50 pound braid, you know. If you're casting at the bumper, maybe 30 or 40 pound. As far as the leader goes, I recommend minimum 40 or 50 pound. You know? And for lures, I like, one of my favorites out there is a Yozuri Crystal Minnow. Not the biggest one they make, but the size down, it's like a 5 1/4 inch. But even something as small as a DOA Calshad, which is a little 3 inch paddle tail on an 1/8 ounce jig head, works pretty good too.
Okay. Any other scenario that would change out there with a higher tide or a full moon or something?
I don't know about a higher tide, but, you know, a stronger current, I might use something a little heavier, like a 1 ounce bucktail jig or a 1 ounce flare hawk. And full moon fishing, I definitely like to bump down my leader size. The full moon creates a lot of light that isn't there the rest of the month. And it might make a little bit different shadow lines, but the visibility is so high.
Because of all the overhead lights and of the main bridge itself?
Yeah, and just the light from a full moon, or even right next to the full moon, right outside of it a couple days before, a couple days after, you get a little bit extra light. The visibility is so high that you almost don't even need a headlight or anything. Wow. And when that happens, the nights where you would be getting bit on 50 or 60 pound fluorocarbon on like a half moon or no moon, the fish start to get a little bit wary of the heavier leader.
Okay.
It's not to say you won't lose a couple fish, but you'll definitely get bit more.
What about natural bait out there?
I'm a big fan of like a 3 or 4 inch pinfish. If you go to the shallows of the pier and cast that white bait and free line a white bait in by those pilings.
Now, do you catch your pinfish there too?
You can. You can on a very small sabiki or even a small single hook on like a drop shot rig or a chicken rig, the piece of shrimp, or one of my favorites, a piece of squid. Because you can catch 3 or 4 pinfish on the same piece of squid. They have a really hard time actually getting that sucker off the hook.
Yeah, squid is pretty impressive. And because you're located right on the intercoastal waterway, you usually have some type of small bait fish there year-round.
Yeah. When the water clears up a little bit, or on a day where you've got a really good incoming tide and the water's a little bit more clear, you get grunts, sometimes small porgies. I forget the exact species of porgy, but they're black and white. A lot of people confuse them for sheep's head, but they're not.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head either, but I know what you're talking about.
Gotcha. And
is there lighting there at night, or would I need to bring a headlamp?
There's some light from the bridge, but you're probably going to want a headlamp.
So the pier itself has no lights on it whatsoever?
No, the pier itself is pretty dark.
Okay.
What about landing the fish? How am I going to get it up to me?
Well, it's something I talk about a lot. I might not talk about it every show, but a pier net. There's a Promar 32-inch, 32.99 drop net, basket-style net that is worth its weight in gold. I do not leave my house without it if I'm land-based fishing.
So a pier net, I don't understand what a pier net is.
So it's a basket-style net on a rope, on a heavier rope, and it's a metal ring that is fixed to 3 different ropes that go to the heavier main rope. And below the bigger ring, there's a smaller ring with a mesh net, a heavier mesh net that's weaved to make it like a basket.
Okay. So it's similar to like some of those old school little crab nets that they used to use a lot up north.
Yes, exactly.
And it's just a string and you lift it up and it creates like a bowl.
Yeah.
And that fish is now sitting down inside that netting, and you can lift them straight up at you.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a lot easier than trying to have a long net on a handle, like a traditional landing net. And it's less of a headache trying to get that fish into the basket net than headfirst into one of those landing nets.
Right.
From a pier or any structure, really.
Well, and because so many of our fish also have a size limit on them, and in a lot of instances, a slot limit on them, which means the fish has to be between this many inches and this many inches. Anything over that or under that, you have to release it. So gaffing that fish, even though you're just catching it and landing it, if you go to gaff that fish from 5 to 15 feet above the water, you've now legally taken possession of it. So
yeah, it's considered harvest.
Exactly. So like snook, for example, are what, 28 to 33 inches?
33 here on this coast, 28 to 32 on the Atlantic side, I believe.
Okay, so if that fish is 33 and a half, and you gaffed it bringing it up on the pier, if it was in season, you would technically be breaking the law because you took possession of that fish.
Yeah.
But with a landing net, or especially that bridge net or pier net, that allows you to land them, maintain the fish's stability as far as its stomach and safety and all that stuff, but actually be able to measure that fish to find out if it's of legal size no matter what the species is.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the best way for me to get the fish out of the net and handle it?
First thing I do is, a lot of the times your line might be a little bit tangled in the net. That's fine. Priority number one, safely get the fish by the lip and get the hook out. That's first thing I do before I take a picture, before I, you know, measure the fish, lip the fish. They're going to try and thrash. Initially, when you first grab their lip, do not try and pick them up, especially if it's a bigger fish. I've seen so many people drop 38 and 40 inch snook because they go to lip it and go to immediately pick it up. That fish is going to panic. So getting the hook out kind of allows it to maybe get a little bit, you know, try and throw its head, try and throw its body. And then once you go to kind of cradle it, put your hand under its belly and go to pick it up, might not be as apt to thrash.
Yeah, they're pretty green when they first come out of the water.
Yeah.
They also, their mouths are like sandpaper, so you might be surprised that it hurts your thumb. They're not teeth, but...
Yeah, you can tell if someone's kind of full of it if they say they had a 40 snook night and their thumb looks very clean.
Yeah. Even a 5 snook night.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you're using a boga grip, you still have a tendency of grabbing that fish a little bit by the lip at some point to control it, to try to remove that hook or lure out of its mouth.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you had a good point with lift, Alex, you had a good point with bringing it up in the net part of it, but I think one of the things that you want to realize is that you're bringing it up onto a dry scenario, so getting that hook out but leaving it laying in that net that's wet instead of moving it over onto the dry concrete before you get control over it. Just make sure that hook or lure is out of the way, then get control of that fish while it's still in that wet net so you can take your measurements if you decide it's in season of legal size, or if you're just going to get a couple quick snapshots and let it go.
Sometimes I see people grabbing snook with towels or with gloves.
Right. And for any fish, that's not the best scenario. If you are going to do that, you need to make sure that the towel, rag, or gloves are thoroughly wet, because all fish have that slime coating on them. And what that is, it's basically like our epidermal layer of our skin. It's protecting it from any type of infections or parasites, anything like that. Taking a dry rag to it or a dry glove, you're wiping that slime off of that fish and potentially causing problems for it. You know, it doesn't always kill the fish, but it darn sure does not help the fish, taking that slime off of them. And since our season right now for snook is closed on the west coast of Florida, you know, we're doing this all strictly for fun, for catch and release. But if we want to continue having a good snook population, which is extremely healthy, by the way, you know, we got to handle them very carefully and take good care of them.
So should I'm not really sure how high up you are on Anger Pier. Should I drop the fish in head first, or do I put them back in the net?
I typically prefer to drop them back into the net and try and get them head first into the current. And they'll kind of wave their fins, and they might get their lips stuck on the net or whatever, but as you drop the fish in, give him a couple seconds to nose into the current. You'll see his gills start to flare, and you know his fins will kind of move. And pick him up out of the water just a little bit, and don't drop him, but kind of give him a couple dunks, see if it stimulates him. And if you drop the basket net, if they're green enough to go, or if they're healthy enough to, if they're revived enough to swim away, 9 times out of 10 they'll kick and push themselves back out of the net and go. That pier in particular is one that's low enough to the water to safely headfirst release them without the net, but I still try to promote reviving them with the net. It's just, it's safer, you know. It's
why better. Do you have them facing into the current when you put them back down?
Because it pushes water into their mouth, and as they can't swim forward or keep themselves in the current themselves while they're in the net. But if you put them head first into the current, it pushes water into their open mouth and through their gills and kind of gets them going again.
So you're taking that bridge net with the main rope, and you're actually twisting the rope in your hand to rotate that basket to get that fish to turn just right into the current.
Yeah, you can do that. But if you get it to where, as you're dropping it, if the fish is facing you and you're facing into, or you're facing with the, if you drop the fish so it's nose first into the current, it'll tend to keep itself that way. The net's designed in a way to where the current's not going to twist it, but the fish being head first in the current's going to keep it nosed into the current. If the rope's all twisted, sometimes it'll spin, but...
I think there's a common misconception of when you are reviving a fish to move it back and forth in the water.
Yeah, that's very bad for them. Their gills are made to have water go through one way and not the other way. Water is not made to go backwards through their gills, through the opening of the gill. It's made to go through their mouth and then through those little fibers that are inside of their gills.
And so it's better to do a figure eight with them?
Yes, figure eight, or... You know, just kind of pull it forward, make a big semicircle, bring them back and forth. If you have to go down to like the end of the pier and get in the water to revive them, don't push them back and forth.
Yeah, this time of year, it's also there's a lot of fresh water on the top of the water, and the top of the water is also pretty warm. So if you can try to get them down as low as you can in the water column, there's a better and faster chance for revival.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do if you hook one of those tarpon?
If you get
jump
lucky,
up and down.
If you get lucky enough to land it, it's tricky with the tarpon because if they're over 40 inches, legally you're not supposed to take them out of the water. But if it's a smaller one, it's kind of the same thing, you know.
Right, you land them basically and handle them just like the snook, but be a little bit more careful. But if it's over 40 inches, I think the best thing about that bridge net is you can slide them into that, walk them down to the shallows, get in the water to be able to get that hook out of his mouth, or at least get down close enough to it where you can cut the leader and allow him to swim away safely without the FWC giving you a hard time.
Yeah, and if you know the measurement of your bridge net, which I know the Promar ones are 32 inches... If that tarpon is well over the size of your drop net, you know, you kind of have an idea of, okay, I shouldn't take this one out of the water.
Right.
Another thing I can't stress enough is never hold a fish vertically by its lip, no matter what size. You see a lot of bass guys do it. I see a lot of guys do it with snook. No matter what the species it is, it's not good to lip a fish. You always want to support some part of its body with your hand, and I see a lot of people try to support bigger fish by their belly and curl their hand in. I'm not a fan of that. I'd rather put my hand back by like the anal fin to support more of their vertebrae and not crush their guts.
Right. So it's better for a catch and release purpose.
Yes.
If you're doing it for fun, catching and releasing, which is awesome, but if you need it for dinner, it's also fine to hold them that way, but you're taking it home to eat it.
Yeah.
So, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Shorelines. Boys, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.